at Voices Radio Network.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by True Nutrition. You can use our code ADVICES for additional savings. Dave, you haven't been around, man. We missed you. What's going on? You have no shirt today. I see you're showing off the tattoos today.
No, I'm too poor. I can't afford one.
You no more shirts for the Crossland family, huh?
No, Scott's taking the shirt off my back, quite literally. to be honest, what's been going on? I ended up with a foot infection. Don't ask me how. Don't know. That's left me immobile for 10 days now. So I am literally just about able to stand now. So I've been having to crawl around the house on my hands and knees.
Okay, we'll get back to that because this is a whole topic. I want to ask you all about this. We have something else, though, that to me seemed like a little bit more intriguing on a national level. And that was, what's this conference that you're going to?
All right. Well, it started by, I was lecturing on a police course beginning of the month.
Okay.
So not last week, the week before. And I got a phone call when I was down there on the Tuesday, could I speak at a conference on the Thursday?
Yeah.
Which was the National Police Legal Database Conference. It's an annual conference. I was only asked because somebody had dropped out, so I was a fill-in. But so I left the course very early Wednesday morning, about 4 o'clock in the morning, drove the 300 miles back home because I literally had a day in which to build this presentation.
You just spoke in miles. Did you do that for my benefit? Or do you say miles?
No, don't work. To be honest, we don't work in kilometers when it comes to distance or speed.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, UK's fucked up, mate. We use half of imperial, half of metric.
Huh, I just assumed you did kilometers per hour.
No, Europe does, but we don't.
That's so weird. My mind's blown right now. Okay.
So managed to put the presentation together, and basically what I spoke about in the instance of that presentation was usage within the force and the fact that the force was very poorly set up to deal with steroid usage within police officers.
Okay.
So police force in the UK have a policy that if a police officer comes forward with a substance misuse problem, be it alcohol, be it painkillers, be it recreational drugs, that they aren't disciplined, they are supported and given support to deal with the problem.
Okay.
They can't do that with steroids because they don't have the facilities in place, don't have the knowledge in place.
Hmm.
So, yes, you can argue it's unlikely that someone's going to come forward and say, look, I'm using steroids all the time, I've got an addiction problem with it. But at the same time, because it's not allowed by the police force, they are legally bound to offer some level of education.
Okay.
So anything that they put in their policy that's non-criminal, they have to be in a position where they can educate staff on the reasons why it's not allowed.
Okay.
So obviously steroids are not criminal to use in the UK. Police force doesn't allow steroid use. Certain police force don't allow pro-hormone use. Certain police force are even looking at SARMs. So they have to be in a position where they can educate as to why that is in policy. They can't do that.
Hmm.
So the conference presentation was about the legal connotations of this and how as an employer they have certain rights and obligations that they must fulfill in supporting their staff. Anyway, off the back of that, I've been invited to speak at the National Juva Conference, which is a two-day conference, 11th and 12th of November. I can't remember for the life of me what Juva stands for, which is terrible because it's the governing body and what I do. But it's to do with expert witnesses.
Okay.
Juva is a police organization. It's something expert witness, something association, but Juva is a police organization. So I'll be speaking in front of 280 drug expert witnesses that all work for the police force.
Oh, wow. And this is going to be like, obviously, drug experts from in other experts that are all going to be related to crimes that people do is what
it's all crime enforcement. Yeah. So I'm literally, there was a lot of objection to me actually talking at this conference because I generally do defense.
Oh.
So I'm effectively their competition.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm sort of going into the lion's den a little bit here with it. And I know I'm not the most popular person with some of these people.
Do some of them, do you have friends though that are on the other side? Like, Okay, some of the guys are cool with you, yeah?
Yeah, good friends.
Do you have any of them that are just like, you know, this guy's like a real prick, and you guys just try not to make eye contact, and one day you come in the bathroom at the same time you're both washing your hands next to each other? And
there's a whole organization, mate, called the National Crime Agency that fucking ain't me. I don't have to have anything for an individual person. So we're going to look at the aspects of criminality. And the concern at the moment is quite simply this. We are starting to see growing numbers of health implications from steroid use. Now, I probably potentially see them a lot sooner than the health regularly off, the health professionals do, because I'm looking for links. It's what I do. And obviously I speak to users and they're a lot more open about what's behind the health problems.
Sure.
In general, people don't go to the hospital and say, oh, I've taken steroids and now I'm having chest pains. They just go to the hospital and say, I'm having chest pains. They won't divulge their steroid use.
Right.
So a lot of issues don't get linked to steroid use. But, I mean, we've had, in the last 3 weeks, we've had two strong men die and another strong man critically ill, which there's no excuses. This is definitely down to their drug use.
Yeah,
and we're seeing more and more and more, and slowly the bodies that be are starting to realize there are links, and all these 30-year-old and 35-year-old blokes turning up that 16, 17 stone with heart problems don't all have genetic heart defects. This is linked to recreational steroid use.
Okay. Wow.
So the two governing factors on drug classification in the UK is its harm to the user. So as we start to see more and more incidents linked to steroid abuse, medical incidents, we're going to start to see growing pressure for a reclassification of steroids as a drug.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, this could be over the next 5 to 10 years, but it's going to come.
What do you mean by reclassification? Like, do you think
at the moment, steroids are class C.
Okay.
Cocaine is a class A.
Okay. Where does weed fall in there?
Weed's B.
Okay.
Now, I think it might have been pulled back down to C now. And honestly, I can't remember. They've changed it that many fucking times.
But like the hard stuff, the heroin, crack, coke,
it's all A. Okay. So there will be mounting pressure to push steroids into a class B.
It's weird they could be still a scheduled drug, yet it's not illegal to have.
Yeah, we have an exemption clause that states that personal possession is not illegal, but only supply is. Then post-2012, importation was made illegal.
Yeah.
And that was to do with the Olympic Games. That was to satisfy the Olympic Committee that we're going to be more proactive in stopping steroids.
Yeah.
But the onset of this is there will be growing pressure to reclassify drugs. Now, the police don't want this because they don't want to have more pressure on them in regards to dealing with a drug class that they have no knowledge about. They don't want anything to fucking do with, and they really don't know what to do with it, and it turns up.
Yeah.
And if a police officer gets a job where it's a domestic assault and then he finds that the guy's got a shitload of steroids and selling gear, he's more likely to just prosecute the domestic assault and not bother with the steroids because they just look at him and go, don't want to know.
Okay.
But it's what I'm going to be looking at is that as we start to see more damage associated with drugs, and as we start to see more ill mental health associated with drugs, steroids this is obviously, we're also probably going to start seeing violence associated with steroid use.
Mm, okay.
I mean, I did a quick survey online about trenbolone, and about a third of the people, I think there was 182 people answered a little survey, and about a third of them said that when they've used tren, they've had serious violent outbursts. Some of these involve snapping people's keys off in their ignition, throwing the keys in the river, driving up the hard shoulder, going over central reservations to get past people. There was some quite severe incidents.
Flat out, guys, if you ever reach that level, just know that that's not normal. You know what I mean? Like, it's important. It's important to draw that line because, like, Jay Cutler probably took a good deal of tren, I'm guessing, in his day. I never saw Jay do anything like that. You know what I mean? You got to keep your shit together. That's my only point, man. That's terrifying.
It's only a matter of time before there's an incident that's linked to steroids.
Yeah.
And then they'll start linking more incidents to steroids. And people, now, in particular, if someone used steroids as a get-out-of-jail clause, so they say that they have diminished responsibility because they were on trenbolone at the time of the incident.
Yeah, I never would have done that.
This is a potentially legitimate defense.
Sure. I can see
that. There's scientific evidence to support this. That they're not acting rationally, they're not acting themselves because they're under the influence of these drugs. Yeah. If that in any way is successful in court, then you're going to see a huge litany of assault cases where people will try and get off on the ground that they've been using steroids.
Yeah.
So this again heightens the profile of steroids involved in creating problems within society, and again puts more pressure on the police or the government to change the classification. The police will be very anti-class change. They don't want steroids to become a higher priority.
Why?
Because they don't fucking know anything about it, and it's a ball ache. Policing is a business.
A ball ache, I like that.
But what people don't realize is policing is a business. To prosecute someone costs quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
As a result of that, the police have to offer value for money. So they have to either prove that by removing that person from the streets or punish them for the crime they've committed, they've had an impact on society. It's for society's benefit.
Yeah.
Because that individual was extremely violent or whatever it may be. But they also have to look at the financials. Police funding is in part self-generated.
Hmm.
Now, we have a thing over here called POCA, Proceeds of Crime.
Okay.
Now, a Proceeds of Crime order is a financial penalty based on how much money they think you've made in committing your crime.
Mm.
So if you were a drug dealer and they think, well, over the last 5 years, he's made £1 million.
Right.
They can then go to court and try and prove that you've earned £1 million.
Okay.
You can then be ordered by the court to repay that £1 million.
Oh, man. Wow.
And that's usually through the seizure of asset. So generally, they don't go for amounts that they can't get.
Oh, I see.
So they will know at this point what asset that individual has.
Yeah.
So if he's got 3 villas in Spain, some nice cars, a boat, and this, that, and whatever, they will look to seize those assets and look to make a pocket to the value of that.
Okay, yeah, they do that in the US too.
Yeah, so obviously the defense are arguing that, no, he hasn't made that much money and he's entitled to keep this, that, one, the other. And then the judge decides what he feels is fair.
Yeah.
Of that money that's raised from those assets, half goes to the government.
Okay.
The other half is split between the Crown Prosecution Service, which is the service that prosecutes people, the courts, and the police.
Hmm. I would feel like that was part of the government. Like, what does that mean then? Half goes to the government.
Half goes into the government financial pot. The other half is split between the funding for those three departments.
I gotcha.
So crime is actually a business for the police, and there is distinct revenue streams there.
Sure. I mean, they even just pulling somebody over and giving them a ticket. I mean, that's $100. They, you know, I don't know how it is over there, but, you know, you hear that they have to meet quotas the end of the month. Like this time, you know, we're recording this on the 29th. That this time of the month, there's going to be a lot more tickets that are going on than middle of the month.
I have no idea if that happens in the UK or if that's just urban myth. I have heard it. I've never seen evidence of it. I don't genuinely know. But I do know that money's gained from poker awards do in part fund police services.
Yeah.
And they fund the particular department, as in the particular police division that's dealt with that case.
Hmm.
So if it's Kent Police, then it would be Kent Police that got the extra funding.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
So a police force that was particularly efficient at, say, arresting drug dealers and prosecuting them could have more money to spend than a police force that wasn't particularly good at it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So all this is going to become more involved in how steroids are policed in the UK.
Okay.
Now, this is not something that's going to happen next week or next year. We're looking at 5 years, 10 years. As these lines start getting drawn, as these dots start getting connected with ill health and crime and everything's associated with, then people will start to look and put pressure. So I know for a fact the police force don't want to change in law. They've told me that a million times. So we're discussing the implication of that and how that moves forward into a sensible approach.
Yeah. Do you feel like there is pressure at all from society over there to make steroids more demonized? I mean, because I know here in the U.S., I mean, the culture would say that if you're a steroid user, you're committing illicit crimes, and B, you're a cheater. Like, no matter what it is, you know, you're considered a cheater. Like, you compete in bodybuilding, I don't care. You're a cheater. You're using gear. I feel like that's what society in general, people outside of it would think. Here, is it like that there?
I think that the general consensus, that I think possibly the mass populace is a little bit better educated over here because it's less taboo. It's less taboo because it's not criminal. So people are a little bit more open about discussing it, but there's still those prejudices without a doubt.
Now let me ask you this now. So if somebody, like I know that marijuana is considered legal here in Michigan, you can use it. Before that you could have a prescription, you know, a card to get it. Now you can just use it freely recreationally, but companies still say, hey, we go by federal guidelines. And if you were to get caught using marijuana, if you were to say get hurt on the job and we take you in to get, you know, fixed, we're going to also test you for drugs. If you test positive for marijuana, you're immediately fired. Are there any rules, regulations like that in the UK?
Very much so. But that's employment law.
Okay.
So, yeah. As an employee, you can set any legal restrictions you want on an employee as long as it's not found to be discriminatory.
Right, right.
But this is where I went back to the talk I did last week, in that if you're going to put these restrictions on, you also have a duty to educate the employee as to why. So with the case like that, you know, steroids, there are the police being one, the military being another. The military does not allow steroid use. And if you're caught using steroids in the military, you are dismissed. But you are not dismissed criminally. You are dismissed under employment law.
Okay, gotcha.
Because you breach your contract of employment, which in your contract of employment, it states you are not allowed to use steroids.
I assume, though, do they test regularly, or is it a specific situation?
They don't test the regular as they used to. They do randomly test, and they will test under suspicion.
Okay. How about sports?
Certain sport bodies will test if they've got the budget to do it.
Okay.
It's all down to finances. I'm actually doing an appeal case with a natural competitor who supposedly failed his blood test, and the federation he competes with actually sent their urine samples off to the States to be tested.
Okay. I think I remember you telling me about this. I've heard of other situations. You know, that Victoria that we want to get on the show, my girlfriend, that's like an area of expertise for her, is specific with sports and testing. So she'd probably you guys could have a good conversation, I bet.
Well, what we're currently waiting for is the chain of custody proof.
Oh, okay.
So how was this sample handled from the point it was taken to the point it was tested?
So you could potentially get this thrown out, is your goal, without even having to defend the situation. Look for every angle you can, basically. Yeah. And this is why it's like you're walking into a den of wolves, right?
Because I've spent the last 5 years standing against these guys in court.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm the guy that stands opposite them in court and rips their reports up for ass paper and pulls them to pieces and says how fucking thick they are and how they don't know what the fuck you're talking about and how they've massively overvalued the drugs and how they're being biased towards the client and all this sort of crap.
Yeah.
That's where I do a little bit of prosecution work from time to time, but the bulk of my steroid expert witness work is defense. It doesn't make a difference either way to me because you're bound by the evidence. Yeah. So, you know, people say to you, oh, well, do my case and you can get me off. No, I can't. I can only work with what the proof says.
Yeah.
If you say to me, oh, right, well, I was caught with 300 bottles of test, but I'm using 10 bottles a week, there's no way I'm standing in a court and saying that because it's just absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
You know, I can't lie. I'm very strictly bound by a code of conduct. I'm very strictly bound by working within the evidence. But it's like having a deck of cards and playing a game of poker. How I play my cards can change the outcome of the game.
Yeah.
And that's the skill. It's presenting the evidence in a way that supports the defense's argument, or in a lot of cases, minimizes the damage.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
So I can't change facts. Yeah. I can't lie. I can't cover up things. And I can't omit things. And if I deliberately, which you can do, if I deliberately don't analyze a piece of evidence in my report, and I get asked about it when I'm on the stand in court, I have to answer, and I have to answer truthfully.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's about how you use that evidence and how you present it in such a way that supports the defense or the prosecution's argument. And if that's the mental jousting that you do when you're in court, because what will happen with the barristers is they will try and trip you up. They will try and take you down a route so you contradict what you say or fall over yourself and vice versa. And I absolutely love that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so as a defense expert, I'm still as duty bound as the prosecution is with the same evidence. It's just how I play the game that's different.
Hmm.
And I'm not bad at it, which has helped.
Hmm.
So, but yeah, this is, it's going to be a good day in the sense that it's a nice meaty subject that I can really get my teeth into. And I want to try and work towards, because the big area that a lot of people struggle with in UK law is, at what point does the amount of steroids become supply?
Yeah.
And at what point is it okay for personal use?
And you've told us before that that definition is not a cut and dry thing. And that's where you come in. You know what? We do have new listeners here, new viewers here at the new YouTube channel. This is a topic that we have discussed before. So I'm sure some of our OGs already have heard this. But give us a little example of what you mean by, or what we're saying by the fact that it's not just a black and white definition of what's personal use and what's not.
Well, the situation within English law is that personal use is legal, possession is legal, but supply or intent to supply is not. And often the deciding factor or the argumentative factor around that is at what point does the amount of steroids you have start to look like supply?
Yeah.
So is a guy with 10 bottles of test, 10 bottles of trend, 10 bottles of mass a dealer, or is he a user?
Yeah.
Is a guy with one bottle of test ENF, one bottle of test SIP, two bottles of test prop, four tests 400, two tests, two sussed, is he a dealer or a user? Because he's got less.
Hmm.
So what I'd like to try, because the problem is as well that when the police find someone with steroids, they will confiscate the drugs.
Yeah.
It is very hard to get them back. There's a big legal argument about whether the police are allowed to give them back. A lot of police forces argue that that is actually supply because...
Oh, my God.
Legal definition of supply is giving it to somebody. There's no money needs to change hands. My argument is it's their personal possession in the first place, so you're returning their property.
Right. That would make sense, you know.
But it needs a legal case to test it, to put precedence into it.
Huh.
So what I'd like to do, so, you know, the thing is a lot of guys get routine random stops. They get checked. The cars get checked in the gym bag. They've got 5 or 6 bottles of gear because they just bought it from the gym, whatever, and they lose them and they can't get them back.
Does that happen a lot? Like, you guys do routine random stops and just search?
Yeah, we do random stops. Yeah.
You got to have suspicion to search someone's car here. You have to have a good reason.
It's not particularly difficult to have suspicion of someone driving down the road, you go, whatever reason. You know, you've got to tell that out. Mm-hmm. We've heard a car matching this description has been involved in this. There's all sorts of shit they can come up with if they want to. But
I see.
We do get it. But the deciding factor about this is there's a lot of time wasted and there's a lot of people unduly put through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
For just having what is their own personal supply. So what I want to try and get off the back of this conference, this coming conference in November, is to start working with them on agreeing some sort of thresholds. So that people know if they have over this amount, they are in the area where the police would could be concerned that they may be supplying steroids.
I see.
It's not going to make no difference to those that sell. But it's just going to make the user be a little bit more careful about how much he stockpiles.
Okay.
And potentially loses through an investigation that doesn't go anywhere at the end of the day.
Hmm. Interesting, man. All right, hey, let's take a quick break here, and we got a couple odds and ends to talk about. I've got somebody asked me a question about training, so we could shift gears a little bit. I want to find out what's going on with this infection you're talking about, and plus, we had some comments about your dog that I want to tell you about on the next episode or from the previous episode. So we'll be back in a second, guys.
Hey guys, we're going to take a really quick break here to shout out our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. Guys, you know, you can buy basically every protein under the sun from True Nutrition, and they have 1,000 different flavors. They also have their oatmeal blends, but today what I want to talk about is the bulk powders that they carry. I have purchased their citrulline malate and their beta-alanine along with the raw EAA powder. And I have their Carboload carbohydrate, which is super cheap. You get like 30 servings. Each serving is 45 grams of carbs, and that's like $22. So, you know, if you buy these raw ingredients, these things are a lot cheaper than if you buy a finished product that has like a bunch of marketing behind it and a fancy label, you know. So instead of doing that, I'm buying these high quality supplements. I've always trusted True Nutrition, and now I can go ahead and play with these ratios. I've been experimenting with how much beta alanine I use, how much citrulline I use. I've started adding carbohydrates into this mix to see what kind of a recovery effect, what kind of a pump effect I get. It's been a lot of fun. So, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. You can do this kind of thing, and then, you know, I'll take Crystal Light to sweeten that, by the way, and flavor it. You can do this kind of thing and learn what your body responds to instead of just buying what's off the shelf and paying a lot more for it. So, guys, just check out TrueNutrition.com, and you could use our codes. They'll get you some additional savings, but, you know, importantly to us, too, it lets them know that you support our programming. So check them out. You can use our codes, ADVICES, and the ADVICES Oats code will get you 25% off of their oatmeal blends. If you guys start experimenting with these things, let me know how it's going. Let me know what you get out of them. And hey, one more thing, guys, before we get back to the show, Dave Crossland. You can reach out to Dave at crosslands.org.uk or hit him up on Facebook if you're interested in working on an off-season program. Dave has he's devoted a lot of thought to what it takes to gain an incredible amount of mass. And if that's something that you are interested in, if that's your goals, then Dave is somebody that you might want to speak to. So you can reach out to him, talk to him more about working with him and what he has to offer. That's crosslands.org.uk. All right, guys, let's get back to this program.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, I want to tell you, we had several people complain about your dog on the last episode because he was snoring so loud through the whole episode. He got a better sleep than I think I ever have for that like hour and 20 minutes, man. He was just cranking.
Complained. People complained about the footy snores.
Dave's dog, a great show, though the dog was distracting. We got questions or comments like that.
Fine. I will ban the footy from my office.
Oh.
No, if you're going to be like that, you hate bulldogs, you hate dogs, you horrible people. Wild nasty, he shall sit out in the cold, in the wet, and in the rain, and he can look through the window.
Look what you guys did. Look what you guys did.
You have no hearts.
I get it. At the same time, it's funny to me, and I can still listen. I can still hear you. So I've never said anything about it, but he does. He's got, we need to get him a CPAP or something, I think, just for his own health, you know?
Yeah. He's got breathing difficulties. Unfortunately, he's had a lot of surgery already.
Has he really?
There's not really a lot more we can do with him, unfortunately.
Oh man.
He's just how God intended him. Stupid and handicapped. I have a handicapped dog.
So moving on from your handicapped dog, let's talk about your foot infection.
Handicapped me.
What, seriously though, what's going on with that, man? I mean, this is out of the blue.
I woke up 5 o'clock Sunday morning, quite a lot of pain in my foot. Was struggling to put any weight on it as the day went, and it eased a little bit, but it was still pretty sore.
Yeah.
Initially, I thought it was an inflamed tendon, inflamed ligament, something like that. And then Monday morning, 4 o'clock, I woke up in a lot of pain. real, I couldn't get it to stop hurting. I ended up Monday evening at the hospital, saw an hour doctor. His first impression was it was gout, which I said, I can't see it being. Last, because obviously I get my bloods done quite regularly. Uric acid has never been an issue. I don't eat a particularly rich diet. I don't drink much. I can't see it being an issue. Plus the pain started in the arch of my foot. It didn't start in my toes. No, it's gout. I went, oh, well, okay, fair enough. So he gave me some tablets. Got worse, and you could visually see the thing starting to quite swell.
Oh God!
Pain got worse. To pain in my toes started. Pains in my heel and my ankle started. So I went to the doctor the next day. They said they thought it was an infection, put me on oral antibiotics, but said if it hasn't cleared up in 24 hours, come back.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours, it was even worse. So we went back, sent straight back down to the hospital, and started on IV antibiotics. Wow. Now, luckily, I was sent home and the nurse would come every day and give me IV antibiotics. But I couldn't sit with my foot down for more than sort of 3-4 hours before it just became too painful to bear.
Okay.
So now on day 7 of IV antibiotics. I did 5 days. It hasn't fixed it, though it has started to improve. So I've got another 3 days. So I'm on day 7 today. Got another 3 days of antibiotics. And I can now stand, put some weight through my heel, but I can't put weight fully through my foot yet. So gone over 2 days of that, and then back to the hospital for a review, and they think it's a very fine cut between my toes.
And that caused it, man. That's nuts. And this is just out of the blue. And guys, I'll tell you, I'm texting with Dave because I was checking in on him. I wanted to make sure, like, this just was so weird. Wanted to know, you know, what's the update? What's going on? And while this is all happening, I don't know if you saw in the news with Flex Wheeler.
Mm.
Like, all this is happening. Dave's like, oh, I'm experiencing this terrible pain in my foot and I can't walk. And then I see, like, they're cutting Flex Wheeler's leg off. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is bad timing. I didn't even want to bring it up to you at the time. I didn't even want to say anything to you about that. You
know? We think, because we have a hot tub, that what's happened is I've gone in the hot tub, and then I have to walk across the garden to get back into the house or around a path.
Okay.
So we think the infection's been caused somewhere between that and there and there. Huh. When we look at the timings, but yeah, it's been sore, and I'm shocked how sore, because the swelling, though, it was there. It wasn't like massive balloon foot.
Yeah,
the swelling, and this is what they said, that the infection they think's been very deep rooted in the inside of my foot.
Okay.
And as a result of that, the swelling's been very internal, which has obviously put a huge amount of pressure on the joints and the ligaments and the bone.
Yeah.
Rather than normal edema type water surface swelling you get, which just stretches the skin.
Right.
This is coming from underneath and expanding my foot from the inside, which is why it's been so painful.
Hmm.
But I've been on codeine. And I mean, I don't like taking painkillers at the best of times, but I've had no choice. I've been on codeine and it just about takes the edge off, but nothing else.
Okay.
But it's on the mend now, thank God. I'm sick of being stuck in the house.
God, no kidding, man. And you were saying you couldn't even walk around with this going on.
No. They'll probably be able to see from the camera, but those scraped knuckles are my knuckles from walking on my hands and knuckles.
You're kidding me. So you're not... Why are you walking on your knuckles? Why don't you use your palms?
Because it hurts my wrist and my foot and hands so flexated, so I have to all that.
Jeez.
Our lass has been absolutely howling because she says it just looks like a fucking silverback walking through the living room.
That's terrible, but funny at the same time.
It's funny at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're crawling across the floor to the bog to try and have a pee.
Oh, God, no. God, no. Hey, I had another question here that somebody had posted. I'm not seeing the actual question offhand, so I'm just going to have to paraphrase it. Somebody said they were asking me about the glute training that I've done and any relationship I've seen to recovery of my low back issues. So just to catch you up, Dave.
Scott is now the Northeast bikini champion.
Yes, the Northeast. Midwest, actually.
Oh, sorry, Midwest.
So, you know, one of my goals, I try to set goals every year, you know, physique wise. And I've had two goals I've really wanted to improve. And that's to, you know, my back, especially my low back and my rhomboids have gotten really thick over the past 4 years, but my width had not been just, it just wasn't matching. And so I wanted to try to figure out how to work my actual lats and really kind of feel it, you know, through the armpit down. That was one goal that I've set and I've been really trying to work on. And the other one that I just set this year was bringing up the glutes, because no matter what I did, I've trained myself to squat with my quads. I put a lot of work directly into my hamstrings. Hamstrings and quads have taken the majority of my leg training. And it's almost, I've realized now that my glutes had shut off. You know, they just were not being used. And so for that reason, they also, you know, go figure, they didn't develop, right? I've really come to the conclusion that if you have a weak muscle group, the reason that it's weak is because it's not firing as well as, say, a strong muscle group is. And then my belief is that if you can learn how to make that muscle group fire, that's the foundation to improving it. A lot of people think like, oh, maybe I should train back twice a week so that I can, you know, do twice as much activity for it. No, the answer is you could do the same amount you were doing or possibly even less. But the key is to learn how to actually feel it. So a lot of times, you know, you hear people tell you like, you got to back off the weight, you know, stuff like that. It's all, you know, looking for ways to try to get better at activation. Anyway, so glutes, it was something that just never grew for me. And the more that I began working them, the more that I realized that they just weren't firing. I've had issues now where I actually, I have re-injured my back doing things like a barbell row in the past year or so. And when I talked to my massage therapist, she had pointed out it looked like my glutes had not fired. And so lower back would take over. Basically, the point being that by training my glutes, they're now activating more when I do any type of leg activity or back training. And I'm experiencing less back issues. Even if my back is hurting a little bit, Dave, if I go in and I do a glute and hamstring day, it helps to fix it. So there's a direct relationship for me with these low back issues that I've been having since 2006 with the glutes. So I mean, it's big.
Our hip and glute area is designed to handle a lot of power, which is why the muscularity around there is so dense. Why the glutes as muscles are incredibly large, single muscles. And if they aren't taking their load, then it will go two places, hamstring and lower back.
Yeah.
So if your glutes don't work, and a lot of people's lower back pain is not because they've got weak lower back, it's because they've got another muscle in that chain that's not pulling its load.
Yeah.
And as a result, the back's getting overworked. It can either be core that's not supporting enough, so the back's having to hold more load. And very, very often it's glutes. Quite often it's just tightness in the glute and hamstrings. They're not flexible enough. I've had the same problem myself with poor glute activation. So I know exactly where you're coming from there.
So it's not something I would think to do, but in the past at least. But now I'll do a couple of sets of what I would call like a glute pre-activation type exercise when I know that I'm going to have to do something like a barbell row, any type of a bent over movement for back day. A lot of times you don't think like, oh, I should train some glutes first, but I'll just do something. Either it be like some type of a glute bridge off the floor or off a bench. I've got a couple of exercises where you even use like the band between your knees. And they, you know, just the, you know, I've been training. I have a couple of clients. Hey now.
Gay.
Is there anything wrong with gay though, Dave?
No, nothing wrong with gay. Just your closet.
I've had a couple bikini clients that I've worked with, and they've taught me the whole repertoire. I've tossed out about 70% of those exercises, kept about 30, figured out a couple more to add to it. And
is this why your IG is now full of glue shots?
Actually, there are a couple.
Yeah, I bet there are.
There are a couple now. Yeah, I have a before and after actually.
But say that, I mean, no, the help is taken aside.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger did some ballet classes and stuff, didn't he, to improve his posing?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, you can pull from other areas to help finish your physique if you're just open-minded enough to look in other directions.
Yeah.
You know, as a bodybuilder, we should never be training like a bikini girl, but no, actually, there's exercises that they do that are very, very beneficial.
And, you know, it's like you were saying, too, man, that the glutes weren't firing. Everything works in a chain. It really does. You know, that's kind of been, The thing I've had to learn here is that that was the weak link. There's always like one weaker link, you know. When you have a series of muscles, there's always going to be one of them that's the weakest. It's just going to be logical that one's stronger and one's weaker, you know.
Have you noticed an improvement on your squat now your glutes are activating more correctly?
I've noticed an improvement on my back health when I squat, because I would run into low back issues. But when I squat, the majority of time, I elevate my heels with plates, and just real like 2.5 pound plates, so that that way I can keep my feet real close together. And then I just drop down and drop straight down basically and bury it. So it's like it's pretty much all a quad movement for me when I do the squats. But you know what though, I do feel like I'm more stable. And like I said, man, I feel like the risk of hurting my low back has been just, it's a lot less now. One other thing you mentioned too, I've seen bikini girls. We were talking about this before the show. I've seen bikini girls that end up having issues for the opposite reason, because they've overdeveloped their glutes. You know, you had brought that topic up. I think that's a great one, man.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to relate that to bodybuilding, where you see the biggest area of that is in chest.
Yeah.
Where you see bodybuilders focus so much on the chest that they start to pull the shoulders forward and they start to round and hunch and get the rounding in the back, because Absolutely. The chest is so tight, they're rolling into it. Yep. And that's an exact prime example of where the chest is worked more than the back is worked. And so the muscular balance starts to tip the wrong way.
Sure.
It is very much about balance. You really don't want, particularly in opposing muscle groups, so bicep to tricep, chest to back, quads to hamstrings, yeah. You really don't want those muscles to be imbalanced in strength or development, because that will start pulling on joints, then you'll have hip joints, knee joints, tendon issues. And it's same in sequential muscles, i.e. posterior chain, you know, muscles that work in line with each other in certain movements. Yeah. Same issue there. You need to make sure that every link of that chain fires correctly, or you will end up with problems. You'll go so far, and then you'll just get to a point where it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, and then the whole thing just tumbles around you.
Yeah.
I mean, I did that similar with you. I had very poor glute activation. I was strong in my quads, and I was squatting 300 kg for reps, no problem at all. As soon as I tried to go over that, I had the quad strength, but I didn't have the glute development, and I started to injure. As soon as I went over 300 kg, I would injure. I could not get higher in weight. Doesn't matter how many reps I could do with 300. When I tried to step up the weight, I'd injure, because my glutes weren't firing and the load was just going everywhere else.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. That's a lot of weight, dude, actually, first of all.
I wasn't exactly small, Scott.
That's a lot of weight, man. You were squatting how much?
300.
300 kilo.
Yeah.
300 kilo is like 600 pounds?
660, is it? Yeah, 660.
That's a lot of weight, man. Were you getting that for a single?
Sets.
How many?
Sets.
Sets of, like, what are we talking?
6 to 8, 10 on a good day.
Fuck. And you didn't, that didn't just kill you cardio-wise either.
Oh, fucking hell, that was, yeah, heavy squat for reps is brutal.
Yeah, that's nuts, man.
I have done a 340, but that was when I was in my 20s.
340, so that's more like 7-something.
340 will be 765 or something. Yeah,
65. And you were in your 20s at the time?
Yeah, about 24, 23.
And I assume you weren't using any kind of like powerlifting suit for that.
No. The 340, I had a belt and knee wraps. The 300, when I was back up squatting 300, I just used knee wraps. I didn't use a belt anymore.
No belt, huh?
No. I don't like them.
Okay, that's something else we've never talked about, belts. Are you just a fan, not a fan in general?
No, when you're doing heavyweight, high rep squats like that, I found the belt restricted my breathing too much. I needed to be able to let my stomach really come in and out to get the air in.
Oh, yeah.
And they were below parallel squats. They weren't half rep bollocks, because I don't know any other way to squat.
Yeah.
I've tried to do higher squats and I just can't do them. It goes all wrong. Okay. So I'd go down until I felt my hamstrings hit my calves, and then I'd come back up.
Whew. Wow. I think you sent a picture one time to me of doing a heavy squat.
That's 300 kilo on that one. Yeah. Or 3-4. I said 300 or 3-4.
Wow. Hey, remind me. Send me that picture again. I'll post it up on this episode. People can see it. But, you know, after the show.
Yeah.
Man, that's freaking nuts. That's a lot of weight, man. I remember talking, you know, you mentioned that the place we see that imbalance the most in bodybuilding is in the chest. I remember talking to Ken Kanakin. He's a chiropractor in Ontario, and he hosts Swiss, which is a big symposium that he does every 2 years of great minds. They all come together and do lectures and stuff. He was saying that the thing you want to look at, you could tell if your chest, because my chest will get tight, you know, and it's been to that point. When I had shoulder issues, it was that my shoulder, everything was pulling in, you know, everything was pulling in tighter. You can see it in guys when you look at him at the gym, and you can see it in yourself. He said that when you're standing up straight with your arms down at your side, your hand, you should be able to see your hand at your side like this. It shouldn't be like this. A lot of times you see guys and their hand is, they're facing forward. If that's facing forward, it's because it's pulling your arm. You should be able to see your thumbs. If your hand is facing forward, then your chest is getting pulled together. Where do you sit with that one? You're already doing the silverback thing, walking around on your fists. So.
No, I'm fine. I don't train enough to get a tight chest.
But it is something I've seen, you know.
Yeah, it's very common. The other thing is quad to hamstring as well. I see that a lot as well.
What have you noticed in that?
Generally, it starts to become knee problems or hip problems. But yeah, I've seen a lot of overdeveloped quads and underdeveloped hamstrings.
I've seen that too. Yeah, I lived that for a while, actually.
I used to love training hamstrings.
Yeah, it took me a while, man. For a while, there was another muscle for me. My posterior chain just didn't want to activate. So for me, it took a couple of years of really hammering the hams to get them to contract. Now they're really strong for me.
Hams and calves were fine. Just couldn't get my glutes to work. Glutes was a bit that didn't work. But I, to be honest, stupidly neglected it because I was like, well, I'm still squatting heavy. I can still, what's it matter?
Yeah. A lot of times guys don't pay attention to glutes, you know?
No. I should have done. Because when I first started out, I did have good glute activation. So it was something that occurred due to an injury. And it wasn't a training injury. It was a car accident. But, yeah, I neglected that, and I paid the price for it later on.
Hey, we have one question we can add in here to the show. Someone just commented. This is from Steven. He says, what's your intake on cinnamon for diabetes? Please, guys, as sugar seems to go through the roof at nighttime. Thanks.
Cinnamon,
yeah. It's a GDA, glucose disposal agent. I want to say that a capsule is like a gram. I could be wrong on that. I'm sure that there's all sorts of different capsule sizes, but it does work as a good glucose disposal agent. You can add it right into your food. It's just basically just table cinnamon, or you can buy the capsules. It's the exact same thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's not bad. You know, it's a good one. I know we mentioned Jay Cutler a little while ago. He used to use cinnamon a lot. I remember him putting that in his oatmeal. You can get a benefit from it, but it is, from what I've seen, it's a milder GDA. So
yeah. I wouldn't suspect it would be particularly proficient, or you'd see a lot more of it.
Yeah. I think it's something that does have benefit, but I mean, if he's seeing a lot of, you know, spikes, if he's diabetic, I wonder if he has medication to begin with, but I mean, a strong GDA would be more like berberine, you know, to help clear blood sugar.
I would question his drug management and his diet management if he's finding spikes like that, because the first thing as a diabetic you need to do is stabilize your blood. So through food and drug management, stabilize your bloods, get an even keel, and then you can start looking at either increasing calories or adding this or adding that to it. But you need that stable baseline because you need to have that normal line to return to. I've worked with a couple of diabetics and you know, it's always the same. We need to have your blood stable. We can't be pushing food up until we've got your blood stable. We can't push food up when you're unstable anyway and then start trying to guess where we need to put your insulin.
Yeah.
We need a stable level, then we can increase the food, see how you react, and then adjust the insulin accordingly. But it's sometimes difficult to get them to just settle down and knuckle under and get their bloods under control.
I can see that. Hey, speaking of supplements, have you ever used, what is this here? What do I have here? Well, there's a few different things in here, but this is hydrochloric acid.
Oh, yeah.
HCl. I've never used this before. Yeah. I was scared to. So now my understanding of this is that this is a lot of times if you have stomach acid issues, it's that your body's overproducing stomach acid because there wasn't enough to begin with.
It's usually the opposite. You're low acid, which is why you have the problem. So by taking stuff like apple cider vinegar with mother, taking HCl, you increase your baseline acid levels and then you solve the problem.
Yeah. So it's working for me. I suffered with major stomach issues for years, Dave, like back when I was forcing food. You would have been proud of me, man. There was one period, Dave, for like 6 months that I ate 10,000 calories. It was like, it varied, but it was like 8 to 10,000 calories in a day. And I was using a lot of shake. Oh, thank you. I got to get back to like at least 3/4 of that for a little while. But it was a lot of shakes too, though. Like a lot of maltodextrin, a lot of raw egg whites and stuff like, it wasn't pretty, man. And I started, as you mentioned, got major stomach issues.
That's not eating food. That's drinking food.
Well, I would do a solid meal. I'd do like 8 ounces of beef or 10 ounces of beef with 2 cups of rice. And then an hour later, I would do a shake with like 50 carbs from maltodextrin, 50 grams of protein. And then an hour later, I would do another solid meal. So it was a bitch. I'll tell you. But
It's very easy to wreck your digestive system with too much food, so you end up with acid issues, or you end up with enzyme issues or probiotic issues.
Yeah.
The healthier your gut, the better you're going to make use of the food you eat. The more efficient you are, the less calories you're going to need to push to grow.
Yeah. So anyway, though, man, I had major stomach issues for a long time, and I sensed it coming back on recently. I popped a capsule of this stuff yesterday and with one of my meals, it helped big time. And then I did it again today, man. My stomach is golden now. Yesterday and today, it's been 100%. So I think it's made the difference.
Good.
Yeah.
Keep it up, young man.
Hey, one more quick one we've got here before we go. James says, let's see here. I'm going to add this to the broadcast. Boom, there we go. How long would Dave recommend being off after being on for 12 weeks?
Minimum 8 weeks post PCT, ideally slightly longer.
Okay. And what if he's, would it be different if he's doing TRT versus coming off and recovering?
If he's doing general blast cruise, I'd still look at a very minimum of 6 weeks, and that's bloods dependent.
Okay.
A lot depends on the previous cycle, how harsh that was, how strict you were, that sort of thing. Obviously, you know, but I'd want to see bloods at 6 weeks and then make a decision based on there what I was looking at and moving forward from that point onwards.
Okay. I think that's fair enough.
And obviously how the person feels and how the training's going, and then those general lifestyle markers as well.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, man, I was just going to say, man, I hope this foot thing wraps itself up pretty quick here. This is dragging on now.
It's frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't like being dependent on people.
Oh, dude, I know what you mean.
You know, and it's fucking awful having to just sit there where people do things around you because you can't do them yourself.
Hate it.
But it has given me a lot of time to think.
What have you been thinking about?
I'm thinking about launching an online training plan business.
You know what? You mentioned this at the beginning of the show, and we didn't start talking about it till right now. What are you thinking about? What's this idea?
Well, what it was, I do plan packs for people. I do them with cycle, without cycle, the full body workout, you know, training plans, diets, and everything. And I just thought, you know what? I think there's a marketplace for being able to buy a little instruction pack on a specific body part that maybe you're struggling with. Now, we're not talking about just a written workout. The idea was that you'd have a video that explains the function of that muscle, how it works, how it's stimulated, and various techniques you can add into exercise to improve the stimulation of that muscle. And then there'll be videos breaking down the movements involved in the workouts and how to actually do them.
I like the sound of that.
So I did a little experiment over the weekend, and I had enough bits and bats and material to scrape together a little pack on arm training.
Okay.
So I just put it out there that, you know, quite cheaply, you could get this arm pack at 15 quid, and it came with three workouts, one for each body part, three different workouts, one for arms, one for triceps, three of each.
Okay.
An explanation behind the ethos of the training, and then the explanation behind how each exercise is done. And they moved very, very well. I mean, I got a lot of inquiries. It was a bit of a hash together, which is why I discounted it, but I got a lot of inquiries. So I then started thinking, you know what? A web portal that you would go onto, you'd buy your pack, give you access, allowing you to access the videos and the information on that body part.
Yeah.
And that could even possibly spin out to an exercise library.
Huh.
So you want to do a new exercise and you're not quite sure how to do it right, or you're not quite feeling it, and you pay, say, $1.99 or $2.99, and you download the video that breaks down that exercise and exactly how to do it.
I like the sound of that.
So I'm working on that. So
I like the sound of that. You know, even like for when I've written a training plan for somebody and I send it over to them, I have to believe that a lot of time, it takes me a long time. I don't do a lot of training plans, Dave. And the reason is because it takes a lot of work to explain to somebody how you want them. Not only, it's one thing to say, hey, do four sets of dumbbell rows. That's easy, right?
Yes, I agree. The execution of the exercise can make the world a difference.
Yeah. So having a video to go along with that, that's going to bridge the gap. I like this idea.
That's the other thing, you see. I think it could be very useful for online coaches. I might set it up where as an online coach, you have a discount code, which you then give your clients. So they get a 30% off, you get a kickback.
Okay.
And then they go on there if they want to learn how to use the exercises you're prescribing for them to use.
Yeah.
And it's all based around maximum muscle recruitment in the movement you're doing. But so I spoke to the web designer yesterday. He's finishing off another project for me at the moment, and then we're going to start looking at building that. It'll be quite a lot of work initially to build the platform.
Yeah.
But once it's built, maintenance wise, it's relatively none.
You know what I thought you were going to say when you told me you were doing a lot of thinking? I thought you were going to tell me that although this infection is probably not related to your general health, that you were thinking to yourself that you wanted to embrace health, get into better overall shape, start exercising again regularly, and continue to check in with us on the Drugs and Stuff podcast to let us know how your progress is going. That if you weren't thinking that, then that's my nudge, just because I care about you, Dave, and you've told us about all, you know, the various health issues you've had. And I want to keep you around for a long time, all right?
I've had enough. I'm going. I'm tired. No, points on board. I have struggled recently with any motivation to do anything physical.
Yeah.
The strange thing is, over this time when I've been laid up with my foot, I've actually started to feel a lot more motivated, which is why I started coming up with the ideas about business developments and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've had quite a lot of productive thought process. And I do want to get back in the gym, maybe not back on the weights. I haven't decided whether I'm going to go back to the weights just now. But I have actually not just pigged out. I've severely reduced my meals because I know I've not been doing anything. And I am conscious that this is like one thing after another just recently, and I need to get on top of it, and I need to start sorting this shit out. So it's not falling on deaf ears.
Okay, good.
Okay.
I'm glad.
We will improve.
I'm glad, man. I am. And if there's anything that I can do to help, please let me know. I would love to do anything I can. I could stand there with a megaphone on like a cart.
Please,
you could pull the cart around.
Please send blank checks to the following address.
That would help, huh?
Definitely. Then I don't have to work and I have to dedicate all my time to getting fit.
All right, man.
Guys!
Anything else we should cover while we're on the show still here?
No, I think we've covered everything. It's been a bit of a bitsy bat one, but it seems to have flowed quite well.
All right. That's it then, guys. For another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, head over to crosslands.org.uk. Check out the programs and stuff that Dave has over there. Of course, truenutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES. Guys, we will see you next time.
Radio Network.